Hello, I'm Rhonda Hamilton. We typically don't produce a radio special when someone decides to leave WBGO. But Dorothon Kirk is not typical. Dorothon is anything but. She's a founding employee of WBGO, which next year will celebrate 40 years on the air. Newark's First Lady of Jazz turns 80 this year, and today is her last day in the office, down the hall from where I'm recording this. But she'll be the first to say, I'm not going anywhere. What you're going to hear this hour is a conversation between Jazz Night in America host, Kristen McBride, and DK, as we call her. During this conversation, we surprised her with a number of different voices we'd queued up. A little Tracing Your Roots, WBGO style. We're calling it Dorothon's Walk, honoring Newark's First Lady of Jazz. Here's Kristen McBride.
What was your understanding of what we're talking about today?
You wanted to ask me something about Newark clubs or the music in Newark or something like that?
Yeah, we want to talk about like some Newark royalty.
Oh, okay. That's tough.
But it's a very specific Newark royalty.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Sure.
All right, check this out.
Okay.
We're going to talk about you.
Oh.
You're the Newark royalty we're going to discuss.
Imagine that.
Well, you know, Dorothon, you are the queen of Newark, and all of us absolutely love you. All of us inside the jazz world, all of us here at WBGO, you really are the reigning queen of this station, of this town, and you have to be the most unanimously loved person out of anyone I could think of in the jazz world. And we want to celebrate you, Dorothon.
Thank you.
I want you to check something out now, because this is about, I can't wait to see your reaction to this. We have a bunch of people who have some messages for you.
Oh.
And we're going to play them for you right now. We want to see if you recognize this voice here.
Uh-oh.
I was living in Houston, Texas. I think the first thing that you and I did together...
That's Harold Dean.
...was we went to Playland Park in Houston.
How did you find
then
her?
We just met and had a good time together. As friends, we did a lot of games together. We used to play paper dolls. We played jacks, hopscotch. One other thing that I can remember is my friend was a very quiet person in school, very smart. And after dark, we always had a game to play, and that was just sitting up and looking and gazing at the stars and thinking, what will we become? What will we become when we get older? Where did we want to do?
That's my oldest friend in the world.
That's so
when
wonderful.
We're off mic, I'm going to tell you a story.
Oh, you can't tell us on mic, huh?
Mm-mm.
Fair enough.
No.
Fair enough.
No curse words or anything, but some things need not.
Should be off mic.
Yes.
There you go.
They should.
She called you Dorothy when we first spoke to her.
Yeah. And she still calls me that until today. Nobody... My older friends, her and some others, never bought into my pseudonym that Rahsaan gave me. You know, Rahsaan Dorothon. Nobody here questions it, but that's a Rahsaan creation.
That's mean.
Yeah.
No,
it is. Didn't that work out perfectly? Because it was so
sure
close.
Did.
He just merged my first name and middle name to match his.
Dorothon, when you were growing up in Houston, were you a big music girl? Were you listening to a lot of jazz at that time? You and Harold Dean?
You know, you all grew up on hip-hop, whatever, whatever. I grew up, when I left Houston, my mother did not have a television. I was a radio person.
Mm.
And I heard Duke Ellington. My mother sub-taught school for a while, but she never went back and got the proper degree, so she stopped doing that. But she grew up to the big band of Duke Ellington. I remember she said she really loved to dance to Duke Ellington when she was a younger person. So I grew up listening to Duke Ellington. I grew up listening to One Mint Julep on the radio. That was our music. I grew up, because, you know, Albert Collins was my cousin. I grew up listening to the blues on radio, and it was all around you. When I was growing up, the girl across the street from me was a couple of years older than me, and a few times she smuggled me into the auditorium. That was a big hall downtown Houston that I was underage, and she smuggled me into a couple of nightclubs. And there used to be the Eldorado Ballroom that was on the corner of Elgin and something down the street from the school that I graduated high school from. That was where I first saw Al Hibbler. I was too young to be in there because I finished high school at 16, but they had smuggled me in there. It was on the radio. I didn't know it was America's art form or none of that fancy stuff. It's much, it's what you did. The 70s was disco. It's what you do. Yeah, and it was all in the black clubs on Dowling Street in Houston, which was the black folk street. We had our theater, we had our clubs, we had our restaurants, we had our clothing places, our barber shops, our funeral homes. Then when I left Houston and went to Los Angeles, me and Harold Dean stayed with my great aunt who had left Texas when she was a young girl. Well, we get to L.A. Jazz is really everywhere then. I want to bore you with my troubles, but from now on I'll be thinking double. I'm through with flirting and drinking with
I got six extra children from a getting frisky.
A man in julep, a man in julep, a man in julep.
California is where you met Rahsaan, right?
Mm-hmm.
We did a feature on Rahsaan a couple of seasons ago, and you told us the story before, mm-hmm. but if you wouldn't mind telling us again.
I was married.
How did you, that's mm-hmm. right, you were married.
I was married to somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, I think allegedly happily married, you know?
You think allegedly happily married.
Yeah. Something went wrong. It didn't last, but we were friends up until the day he died. Mm-hmm. I remember when Quincy Jones used to send for Rahsaan out there, because Quincy loved Rahsaan to do those record sessions. But yeah, I was married to someone else. So my kids have known Rahsaan since they were little. I actually had, it's funny, I live on a corner now, and I lived on a corner when I had first met him, and I had a two-story house. This monster I have now is three stories. But anyhow, I remember my two middle kids, I have three girls, running up the stairs when they would see Rahsaan, because they were kind of afraid of him for some reason. It's something about sightless that frightens kids, my sisters.
Right. Now, there's another person who has contributed to this show, another close friend of yours from that time.
Okay.
See if you recognize this voice.
Okay.
Played with Rahsaan probably around 67 or 68, playing at the Bothan Club. Dorthan came up from L.A. to hang with Rahsaan. And I remember I would give them a ride back to the Pickwick Hotel in San Francisco after the gig, because I had a little car, Volkswagen Bug. And, you know, I learned so much from Rahsaan, and Dorthan was there with the music, you know, like, boom. We have a lot of things that we don't even talk about. We just look at each other and say, goes way back.
Steve Turay, no brainer. Yeah.
What happened? I don't know if this is an on mic or off mic story, but what happened when you finally met Rahsaan and you decided that that's where the rest of your life was going to be?
Well, it didn't happen like that. The story that Steve only told part of the story.
Sure.
I was separated, and Rahsaan sent me a ticket to come up to San Francisco to see him. And I did. Back then you could get a ticket on PSA Airlines for
right.
$10. You
right.
guys hear that? And
at the last
and
minute.
So I went up there to see him, and he was cool and everything, and I wanted my own separate room. I was just going to see him as a friend and everything. Rahsaan was in transition with his then wife in New Jersey. And he still had to go onto the road to make a living. So I wasn't supposed to be his anything but assistant or
right.
companion or some name like that. But the rest is history. But it didn't start out
sure.
being a madly in love affair. I was stunned myself.
Yeah.
And when the time came, I had no idea I wasn't going to be living in California. Rahsaan always felt that jazz musicians shouldn't have to go up and down the road to make a decent living. They should be able to teach, they should be able to do radio shows, hence Radio Free Rahsaan, that I don't know if you know about that.
Yeah.
They should be able to do other things musically, work somewhat on the road as well. So Rahsaan had his eyes set on some of the higher institutions of learning in San Francisco. I figured it was going to work out. Well, it didn't. Now my stuff is in storage at Beacons in L.A. Anyhow, his next choice was Boston. We looked all over Boston for a place because he thought it could work out there. Boston didn't work out.
Hmm.
So then we ended up staying in New York like a year, a little over a year, and then we got on the train. I don't remember why. I didn't know anybody hardly back here. We went to Philly to see Bill and Trudy, and we were just sitting around. That's when I first met them.
That would be Mr. C and
Mr.
Trudy.
C.
Wow.
Yeah. I was frustrated. I was ready to take my butt back to L.A. I was just, just everything is new to me. Nothing is working out. And Mr. C, Bill, said, well, Ra, his close friends called him Ra. Why don't you just stay here and y'all move up here to Philly, because rent is really cheap here until you figure it out. And that's what we did, 4714 Green Street in Germantown. And we lived there for 14 or 15 months. I hated it, but I loved the I loved the antique shop on Germantown.
Did you hate the house or the town?
Mm-mm. I hated the town because the street. I mean, remember, I came back east from California. The streets weren't going the right way.
You wasn't feeling Philly.
I wasn't feeling it, and just the whole. I came from the west.
The West Coast. No, I feel you. I feel you.
And that, all the decor and the old buildings and stuff. That's great when you're looking at it in
a postcard or something. Right.
Yeah, but now I'm living. I'm like, oh, I don't like this.
Everybody all on top of you.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was an adjustment for me, but yeah.
And so you were in Philly for 14, 15 months,
mm-hmm.
and then what?
Then we just, Rahsaan caved in, if you will.
Right.
The teaching thing wasn't going to work out, and so he decided that he wanted to be as close to New York as he possibly can, because when he came off the road, he wanted easy access to New York for several things. The clubs,
sure.
Ruben with the repair shop that was up over that store on 8th Avenue.
Wow.
And of course, Ponte's Music, and on and on and on and on. And of course, those record stores.
It was a whole different scene back then.
It was a whole different scene.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
That's when we moved to that house that I'm still in to this day.
Yeah.
July 22nd, 1974. I remember the day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Darthon, we have another big fan of Rahsaan's who contributed to this episode and who then became a big fan of yours.
Okay.
You may not remember, but when I had just finished, or no, I was in between seasons as a clown on the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus, which you remember was my first job out of college, and I went home to Dayton, Ohio, and Rahsaan was playing, I guess, the Living Room in Cincinnati, and I wanted to hop in the car and drive down and see Rahsaan, and my parents said, "We don't want you going out." I sat down and wrote Rahsaan a long letter, pouring my heart, my 21-year-old heart out to him. And you answered it. You replied to me with a letter that was so characteristically thoughtful and caring and beautiful. And I'll always remember it. So even before we met, and we met, what, like 10 years later, when you were at WBGO and I was in charge of jazz and classical music at NPR, and there was this beautiful woman, just as beautiful as I always imagined you. And so thank you for all of it.
Recognize that voice?
No.
He lives in Washington, D.C.
It's not Murray.
Yep, that's Murray.
It does, I don't hear Murray. Okay, Murray Horowitz. Yeah.
Oh, your reactions are just the best.
Murray. Thank you.
Do you remember, now does it all come back to you, the story he was telling about you writing the letter?
That sounds like something I would do because I write thank you notes and I send out 150 Christmas cards every year. That sounds like something I would do, but I don't really actually remember that. Maybe the years went by, you know?
Yeah. Bethany Baptist Church, and particularly Dr. William Howard,
Absolutely. Who was
so another important staple in our community. How did you first get involved with them?
Well, our original minister who had been at Bethany 37 years, Reverend Scott, retired. Dr. Howard came to Bethany, being a big jazz fan, and at the time he came, Bethany had a Saturday service that was very poorly attended. I didn't ever go. And so Dr. Howard, because he is just an amazing individual and he's smart and he's an activist and all that, he came up with the idea that what if we had a jazz vesper service on a Saturday, which is unheard of in a Baptist church, okay? Because jazz is the devil's music, right? That's what the Baptists say.
Yeah.
He had the support of some of the deacons and some of the trustees who themselves were jazz fans. We chartered buses. We ended up with three buses where people paid to get on the bus and park their car at Bethany, went to observe jazz vespers at St. Peter's. Some of those, like me back then, drove because we wanted to hang out.
Right.
And so everybody loved it. They saw that, you know, they weren't going to go to hell because they listened to some jazz in church.
Right.
And that was the beginning of Jazz Vespers. And June 2nd, we end 18 years. Yeah. And it's been absolutely amazing.
Steve Touré, speaking of our brother Steve, he had a tune he wanted to dedicate to you.
Okay.
Can you guess what tune?
Probably Dorthon's Walk.
Uh-huh.
Dorthon's Walk is the piece of music that Ra wrote for you. And I was so fortunate to record with him there. And you were there. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
This is Rhonda Hamilton, and you're listening to Dorthon's Walk, honoring Newark's First Lady of Jazz, Dorthon Kirk, on WBGO 88.3 FM. Around here, she's affectionately known as Ma Kirk, or DK. Here's Christian McBride and Dorthon.
Tell me about the first time you heard that song.
I don't remember.
You know,
your
honesty is so refreshing.
I don't remember. But what I do remember, because that's when he was playing with one hand, when he recorded it in the studio, I thought he was crazy, Joel Dorn. And I thought he and Rahsaan together were both crazy. You know the album cover with Rahsaan's feet going different ways? And and Case of the Three-Sided Dream and audio code. What does that mean? That doesn't even make any sense. And they used to ask me stuff. They asked me, what did I think? And of course, I kind of said it. But anyhow, the record didn't come out with that on it until after Rahsaan died.
Uh-huh.
And Joel had an idea. I wish I had kept those boots. I had some burgundy boots, because I wore them to Rahsaan's funeral in Ohio. Snow was up to here. Mm. And after everything had settled down, Joel had me to come to New York and went to New York to Regent Sound Studios so Joel could record my footsteps with those boots on.
No kidding.
So that is really real. So it was added on. I literally went to New York, and even though I thought that was a crazy idea, I went to New York just to walk a few seconds so he could record it so it could be real.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hip.
Yeah.
We're speaking of Joel Dorn, the late great producer from Philly. And I think I told you I went to high school with a son, with Adam. So this the you living in Philly and the whole Joel Dorn, and Joel Dorn also was a DJ on WHAT.
Rahsaan used to listen to.
That's right, where my uncle did promotion, so we're all connected.
It's all connected.
All connected.
You were very young, but it's all connected.
Now, this next thing here, you might know this next story.
Riding on a bus to a conference, a radio conference in Chicago, I happened to sit next to someone who was going to the same conference. His name was Bob Ottenhoff. And Bob told me he was starting a jazz station in Newark. And I asked him if he had a staff yet. He said, no, he was thinking about it. And I said, you know, there's someone you should consider. Her name is Dorthon Kirk. And I met her in 1971 when she came to Boston with her husband, the late Rahsaan Roland Kirk. But what can she do? What does she do? I said, well, you know, she can do a lot, Bob. She's a jack of all trades. She can just about do anything. She's passionate about the music. And I finally said to Bob, I'm sure the musicians are going to come to BGO and help you as much as they can. But, you know, they really don't know who you are. But they know who Dorthon is because they love Dorthon and they loved Rahsaan. And if you hire her, you have instant credibility. And so he did.
Of course, Steve Robinson. And it's all true. Did he tell you the part about he and Bob ran into Betty Carter, and she used to say them two white boys that's going to start a radio station?
Sound like Betty.
Because they went to see her.
Uh-huh.
She was apparently appearing out there, and they told her all about it. They were just young kids, you know? Long story short, sure enough, it happened. But
are you the last founding member of BGO still here?
Kind of yes, but kind of no, because I actually came October of 78 before we moved in this building. BGO was still on the fourth floor of the high school, Central High School, its old home, Board of Education. We moved into this building January of 79.
Uh-huh.
Rhonda, who I choose to call Sweetie, came sometime late spring, early summer of 79.
Okay.
So she was part of the beginning as well.
Mm-hmm. Got you.
Yeah.
We have another story that goes with the story that Steve just told. Let's roll that one.
And this is going to be a station that treats jazz as America's classical art form, that treats artists with respect, that treats jazz lovers as citizens, so we're going to do a fair amount of news and public affairs programming as well. And we have no money in the bank and no studio. We didn't have a library, so we started with announcers bringing their own collections from home. And when we told artists about what we were planning to do, to treat them as artists, to treat them as giants in music, to treat their music with respect, there was a lot of skepticism because, you know, over the years, musicians have heard a lot of talk, but they don't always get to see the results of that talk. The station could not have succeeded without Dorthon being a member of our team.
RVR went off the air September 8th, 1980, at noon. Our attorney was Phil Elberg, which is around here at Gateway 2. He's still part-time. So Bob walked around there to let Phil Elberg know that we were only 18 hours then. He's like, okay, we got to take advantage. We're going 24 hours today. So He went around the corner to talk to our attorney, Phil Elberg. And so Phil was like telling him all these things and blah, blah, blah. And so Bob listened to that because we all talked about this lately. And so Bob said, no, you don't understand. I'm not asking your permission. I'm going 24 hours today. What I need is you to back me up. Well, again, the rest is history.
Wow.
Bob's like, no, I'm not asking your permission.
This is what we're doing.
So BGO is something beyond just a radio station.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call it, but.
Wow. Well, it's a family. It's a family.
It is.
It's historic. It's a community.
Right.
Now, there is one more memory here from Steve Robinson we want to play for you.
Okay.
I was the first development director of WBGO, and so I was responsible for setting up the pledge drives and the grants and the membership. I remember one in particular, and Dorthon helped. I was writing a grant to the National Endowment for the Arts, a so-called challenge grant. It was pretty hefty. It was $90,000. And, you know, I waited till the last minute, and Dorthon was helping me organize all the papers, and they were all spread out, and we didn't have a collator. And as you recall, the clock was ticking. It had to be postmarked by midnight. We ran to the post office. We got there just a few minutes before midnight, just in the nick of time. And we gave it to the postman, and he said, I'm sorry, the clock has already advanced past midnight, and that was it. And so we persuaded him to hand cancel it on the date before midnight. We submitted the grant, and we got a $90,000 grant. You remember that, Dorthon?
I do. Yeah, I absolutely do.
Wow.
Dorthon, if I was going to dedicate one piece to you out of all of Rassan's recordings, it would be Bright Moments, because, as you know, I was there at the Keystone when he first performed it. And when I think of Bright Moments, I think of you, because we always use that salutation to each other at the beginning and end of conversations. And when I think of Bright Moments, I think of you.
Bright moments, bright moments, bright moments, bright moments, bright moments, bright moments, bright moments. Right now.
This is Rhonda Hamilton, and you're listening to a special we're calling Dorothon's Walk, honoring Newark's First Lady of Jazz. Here's Christian McBride and Dorothon.
Now, on the work front, you keep everyone here at the office on their toes. Here is one memory from a former WBGO employee.
I started as a part-time fill-in announcer at WBGO. At that time, the on-air studio was on the Rutgers University campus, and the station was completing renovations over at 54 Park Place. Anyway, one of the desks there belonged to Dorothon Kirk, and I was a big Rahsaan Roland Kirk fan, so I recognized her name right away. I'm on Evening Jazz one night playing Theme for the Eulipians. I love that song because, well, it felt like it spoke to the almost secret society of jazz fans, a club that I always wanted to be a part of. He calls himself a journey agent, a Eulipian, says his friends, the poets and the artists and the musicians are Eulipians too. Listen to his tune. He calls it the duty-free gift to the traveler. Anyway, the phone rings. It's Dorothon. She introduces herself and says, "I like the music you're playing." And I babble on about how much I love that song, and she tells me that the poet, Betty Niels, is someone that she still talked to frequently, and I'm awestruck the whole time. I was still young, impressionable, and I had to pinch myself every time I met people who I greatly admired, even if it was just on the phone. I had to wait a bit to meet Dorothon in person. The following year, I walked into the building at 54 Park Place as a full-time employee. And we met in the hallway, and when she connected my name to the voice on the radio, she said, very loudly, "Oh, you're white!" And I thought, this is going to be the most amazing place to work.
I did. I did.
Over the years, I've recognized that Dorothon has a special kind of power. You know, she could have said one disparaging remark to someone very important in the community, and that would have really been a dagger to anything that I had hoped to accomplish. But I also think that she could see the purity of intent and purpose in others, you know, because she so clearly possesses that herself. She nurtured it in me, and she also set me straight a few times. You see, the power and the beauty and the spirit of WBGO, it comes from the grassroots. And Dorothon Kirk has always been connected to that. She remains the spiritual center of WBGO. And that's been her duty-free gift to the traveler. And that's why we love her.
That's beautiful, Josh. I did.
You didn't know he was white, huh?
And it didn't make any difference, but I just was like, wow. I really did.
Because
I used to love what he played on the radio when he would fill in.
Yeah.
You know, his name is Josh and Jackson. Black, right?
Well, he is from New Orleans, so.
But I see I didn't know all that. Yeah, that's true. I just thought he, you know.
That's Soul Brother Josh. We love you, Josh. You know, a theme throughout the show is the impression that you make on people, your childhood friends, your coworkers, and of course, there are the musicians.
My name is Stefan Harris.
My name is Brandi Younger, and I'm a harpist.
I'm Don Braden.
Hi, I'm Cassandra Wilson.
I'm a jazz saxophonist.
I'm a vibraphonist, composer, educator.
And I have no definition for myself. Dorothon, you know you have been more than a mother. For me.
You're a powerhouse.
You've looked out for me from day one.
You're an inspiration, an energizer.
You are absolutely
a mover and a shaker.
A queen.
You have been so gracious, so generous. You helped guide me early in my career when I first came up from New Orleans with mud on my shoes. You gave me a lot of really good advice because I wouldn't listen to anyone except you. And you were instrumental in my early years in helping me to find my voice. I want to thank you so much for taking me under your wing. You and WBGO, I love you forever.
Dorthon, I consider you the queen of soul, the queen of jazz, the queen of love, and the song that comes to mind for me is Duke Ellington's Come Sunday. You are such a beautifully spiritual human being. I think it's very, very appropriate to take such a beautiful spiritual song and dedicate it to you.
Lord, dear Lord of love, God Almighty, God above, please look down and see my people through.
Have to leave us.
I'm not leaving. I'm just physically not going to be at WBGF. In the fall, I'm going to sit down, and all of these things that are rolling around in my head, ideas, different ideas that people like Sanaz have given me, John Schreiber, and see where everything falls. Knowing, and I say this based on my life, if I sit down and plan something, I guarantee you it's not going to work like that. It never has, and I don't expect it to now. But his plan has always been a better plan. I couldn't have, in my wildest imagination, dreamed that any of this stuff would have happened to me. I told you, I would probably go in and try to get a job at a record company to do promotions, to help the jazz musicians in that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there are plenty of ideas, and I think there are a couple of different DKs in here all related to the music. I have to see which one would better serve whatever purpose.
You know, I think all of us who know you, I once described Wayne Shorter as the Oracle, but I really think all of us feel the same exact way about you. You are such a your home for all of us. You remind us of that person that we need to inspire us, to reel us in when we get a little too far off course. You're our mother, you're our sister, you're our friend. And we love you so, so deeply.
Oh, thank you.
We've played a couple of songs in your honor, but what song would you like to request for us to go out on? Anything you want to hear?
Rahsaan used to get tired of me asking him to play the song. And so one day, I always wanted to be a piano player because my mother played the piano in church. And I never forgave my grandmother for selling my mother's piano because she wanted to buy a gasoline refrigerator, one of the refrigerators with that thing on top or something. But anyhow, Spirits Up Above was one of my favorites. And I used to request it at the clubs. I mean, I knew other songs, but it was just something about Spirits Up Above. I think the African group Osabisa recorded it. Yeah. And so one day at home, Rahsaan sit down at the piano, and he taught me the changes to it. I couldn't improvise. He's like, now here, play it for yourself. And that's the truth.
Dig that.
That's the honest, the truth. Because, you know, it's a pretty simple song, but he could, of course, take it to another level.
Wow.
So that was one of my favorites.
So we should play that.
Yeah.
Here's our final thing, Dorothon. Mm-hmm. Just in case you were wondering what all your colleagues, friends, and musicians thought about you.
Mm-hmm. Dorothon.
Hey, Dorothon.
Dorothon Kirk.
Dorothon, Bright Moments.
You've been a real crusader for the music.
Congratulations on an amazing life of contributing to the incredible music of jazz.
Keeping the music alive, keeping those bright moments out there.
There's no Old Testament and New Testament. When it comes to Dorothon Kirk, there's just Testament, my friends. And you've heard a little bit of it here.
And I'll miss you dearly, Dorothon. I love you so much. And thank you so much. You've been a mentor to me. You've been in my behind when you needed to be and when I needed it.
Hip, hip, hooray for Jazz and Dorothon at 80. Bright moments like now.
May you live forever and I never die. We love you, Dorothon.
Dorothon, we love you. We love you. As Duke Ellington said, we love you madly. You are the absolute greatest. Dorothon, there's one more musician who wasn't able to be at your tribute who we have for this show.
This is Kurt Elling. I'd like to add my voice of praise and love for Dorothon Kirk. From my first memories of visiting the station, maybe 20 years ago, Dorothon would be at the reception desk, even though she obviously didn't work reception, waiting to welcome me like a long-lost cousin or a nephew. She had so much enthusiasm and heart to share for me and for whatever project I was pushing. And she always had some exciting things to talk about, either some bit of history or something that was happening on the scene that I didn't know about. When I moved to New York, she made it feel like it was my home right away. She reminded me so much of all my favorite people back in Chicago. And she wanted to know all about my little family and how my wife and my babies were adjusting. Dorothon's obvious love and concern for the musicians, for WBGO and all who sustain it, for young people and for the scene, have made her an invaluable asset and friend to all who love jazz. Dorothon, if you can't tell by now, everybody loves you. I love you. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Kurt.
Dorothon, is there any last words that you have for all of us who love you so much at WBGO?
Yeah.
The listeners, we musicians, what do you have to say to us?
To the listeners, I say, please, with whatever dollars you have, please continue to support WBGO. It was meant to be, and it came from actually nothing. I mean, we really had nothing. No letterhead. The first program guide was done on a stencil machine. You got your clothes all messed up and so on and so forth. And so whatever dollars you have, support it. Spread the word. Word of mouth is one of the best PR tools. And as I said to the young people, I hope I've left something of me with you all, and it's up to you all to take the ball and carry it on from here.
We will do our best.
They said they would. They all promised me, and they will.
Yes, yes. And your spirit will always be alive here at WBGO and within everyone who you've ever touched. And we look forward to, I think the quote was, you're going to be more present than ever after you leave WBGO because you're going to make sure we stay on our toes here, right? Big hugs and kisses to you, Dorothon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
It ain't Superman. It ain't Superfly. It's Super Self. Yeah, there are a bunch of people sitting around doing everything. Ain't no nobody talking about nothing. Ah, yeah.
You've been listening to Dorthon's Walk, honoring Newark's First Lady of Jazz on WBGO 88.3 FM and WBGO.org. This special was produced by Simon Rentner, Katie Simon, Alexandra Hill, David Tallickson, Alex Arif, Sarah Kirsten, and Anthony Nieves. Thanks for listening, and all the best to you, Dorthon. We love you. I'm Rhonda Hamilton.
Illumination and just doing the thing in the bucket. That's just freaks. That's what they are. If you ask me, when I look at them, that's what I see. I ain't got nothing against them.